bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Welcome to the big show. Normal services resumed. We're back. It was a great time. Eric, thank you very much for taking the hot seat and looking after things more than ably, you bastard. but we're here to discuss the week in technology as normal. Fantastic panel. A few regulars and a new boy. He'll be bending over and getting six of the best later.
Don't tell him about
and there was us wondering what Sarah was going to do after the show.
That's what it is. Popping around, Richards. James Hart, how you doing, sir?
Well, hello from the heart of Bedfordshire, the place where everything's happening in politics. We've got Nadine Dorries, who's about to appear on I'm a Celebrity while still being an MP, and nobody's happy about that. And our local MP getting strung up in front of the court for nicking £60,000. So, yeah, all good here.
Oh, blimey. It's all kicking off in Luton. Now, Nadine's made a bit of an error there, I feel, in judgment.
Oh, totally. The fact that she's still an MP is just brilliant.
Well, they can't take that offer, though. If you get elected as an MP and you never go to the Houses of Parliament, there's nothing that anyone can do. Ask Jerry What's-His-Face from Ireland.
Jerry Adams,
aye.
What's-His-Face? I've forgotten his name now. The Respect MP. Wasn't he on
What's-His-Face, the same bloke?
Oh, George Galloway.
Wasn't he on
Big Brother?
Yeah, but he was
independent. That's why he got expelled. He didn't have a party to get expelled from.
But apparently they've taken away her whip, whatever that means.
That's going to spoil it all. Then.
Based on Conservative MPs, mate, you only need an orange to complete that picture. Eric has no idea what I've just referred to.
And he doesn't want to know, otherwise it's going to be X-rated content.
Stephen Millichamp, was that it?
Yes, it was.
Stephen Millichamp. Just Google that, Eric, and then we'll get to you, and you'll be laughing by that point. next to him, it's a new fella that we've got on, a very special man, because he's not just a technology guru who writes, but he writes as a GP as well, a general practitioner. Richard Hartness, how are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Welcome along to the big show. Such as it is. But what attracted you to technology then? Well, I mean, because GPs are not renowned for their technical prowess, really, are they? I mean, mine still checks my prostate by shoving his thumb up my arse, so it's not exactly...
We needed you, and
It's not exactly the cutting edge, is it?
Sadly, we still haven't found a better way to do that, really.
I don't mind. I've got a female doctor. Saves me a fortune.
The enthusiasm for technology has been there long before I was a GP. So one of my first big presents I got for Christmas was a ZX Spectrum Plus 2. So it all ruled from there, basically.
Did you say, my goodness, that's fantastic, I never need to write again?
No, I mean, the thing is as well that, Richard, though, seriously, the chat room's saying, I don't have to go every week to the doctors. I hadn't realised that, but okay. But seriously, Richard, there's loads of stuff, particularly in iOS devices and that kind of stuff, that would be an absolute brilliant innovation for GPs, I would have thought, for keeping track of movements and where they go, mileage, etc., to-dos.
That's a bad turn of phrase.
What?
Ewan's not even aware of what you just said.
I'm not. I'll need to listen to that back, but never mind.
You're absolutely right, Ewan. There are tons and tons of good medical apps out there. I mean, I actually use a couple day-to-day at work. The kind of bible for doctors is a book called the BNF, British National Formulary, which is quite a thickish, heavy book, and that's recently been launched as a free app for doctors. So,
that's cool.
It's really good to carry around.
Is that a free app for anyone that wants it?
No, you have to be registered. So it was a NHS.
It could be a hypochondriac's encyclopedia, couldn't it?
They've already got Wikipedia, Ewan.
I always wanted to know, Richard, what's the difference between BNF and MIMS?
What's the difference? MIMS is kind of more easily searchable if you want to look things up by their company name, whereas the BNF's more like the proper technical drug name. They tend to have a lot more branded stuff in MIMS, and I think it's sponsored as well, whereas the BNF isn't sponsored. It's a government sort of run thing. So
sponsored drugs. That's what we need. Well, welcome, sir. Enjoy. I hope you'll come back at some point.
Thank you.
Sarah, Miss Sarah Gray, how are you doing, girl?
I'm fine, thank you.
Ireland, off down for the Cayley later on tonight and get pished.
No comment.
Okay, so that means you are then. is that because you're faking going to work tomorrow?
No, I am actually working tomorrow morning, believe it or not. So I can't actually do anything that's going to get me too much enjoying my last
that
night in Ireland.
Remains to be seen.
Sorry?
That remains to be seen.
Well, yes, I know exactly. But
good week.
No, I'm back to Blighty tomorrow for 3 weeks at least. So
excellent.
And yes.
And last but by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan.
Hey.
How's it going, pal?
Good. How's it going?
Yeah, great. Your Star Wars saga last week. Not to mention the understanding of what retina means was entertaining beyond belief, I found it. I was chuckling.
Oh, yeah, I lost it a bit about that, didn't I?
Yeah, no kidding, Sarah. Holy hell. What does retina mean, Sarah?
It's that thing on the on your eye, isn't it?
It's the pixel density on your eye is less than the pixel density on the screen. Was that it or something? No?
I can't remember, but it was funny.
It was.
I thought it was funny. It was great. It made me laugh.
Yeah, please don't ask me what the resolution of the human retina is. I have no idea.
And what had you going about the Star Wars conversation?
Just the fact that Sarah loved the Phantom Menace.
Oh. Yeah.
And the other thing I thought was...
There has to be James, in the world, hasn't there? So,
James was saying it got incredibly dark towards the end. I was like, this is a story about the creation of the Dark Lord, the Antichrist of the entire three films that are about to come.
And My daughter cried!
And you want big eyes on him and Disney.
Yeah. Yes!
Maybe that's what you're going to get now.
Darth Vader's going to get a big pair of nice wound eyes.
Speaking of, has anyone noticed Angry Birds Star Wars came out today?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pick of the week already then. Right, absolutely. It's been a great show. Thank you very much. You just imagine the next three are going to be musicals.
Oh, dear.
Disney musicals.
Yeah, with Mickey Mouse.
The week in technology. There's been loads going on. We've got a story to talk about tonight about Google and Microsoft looking for the white space in Birmingham, or in Britain rather, which is nothing like the white goods that Eric now knows about. And also a super fast broadband system that's coming from Bangor University. MasterCard, thanks to Alex, MasterCard's talking about a new LCD screen and keyboard that goes along with your MasterCard, which is unbelievable. I haven't read the story yet, but when we get to that, I'll disbelieve it entirely. And David Cameron is testing an app to aid government decisions. And, of course, America's first BlackBerry president got re-elected. Well done, Obama. I was crapping myself that blood the bloke was going to get in. he doesn't fill me with confidence. The chuckle there was from the broker who lives in the Democrat state.
Fucking.
Oh! That'll be editing then.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyone got a time code?
None of us were expecting Sarah.
Shall I leave that in because it's Sarah? We're waiting for his comeback.
Clear opinions there, I think.
Has Sarah just stormed off in a huff?
She's just disappeared. She's lost connection somehow.
Good Lord.
I want to know if she kissed...
That swear filter really works well, doesn't it?
Well, she's in her parents' house at the moment.
They're just going, what you talking about, girl?
Did you kiss your mum with that mouth?
They said, no more internet for you.
Just hanging up the wall.
You're grounded.
Yeah, that's it. She's realised that she's got further on in Halo 4 and she's stuffed those lot. The Week in Tech, Google. Richard, you're the new boy. You can start us off with the first story. Google and Microsoft are going for the Wi-Fi offensive, according to the article in The Telegraph that you've grabbed down. And this, you said this was to do with the white space that's kicking around now that the TV signals have gone off and there's a bit left over for everyone. What interests you about this story?
Well, what I find interesting about it is that this, I'd never heard of this term of white space before, so that was interesting to me. And apparently what it is it's traditionally been like a buffer zone between sort of the frequencies that were used before for mobile phones and for TV and so on.
Hmm.
And they now sort of think, well, we need to use that dead space, really, because we can make some money off it, I guess. So
spectrum, aye.
Yeah, exactly. And so the article basically outlines that the Google and Wi-Fi are, as they've called it, on a major charm offensive to try and get hold of this so-called white space. And what it's postulating they'll do with that is to create broadband access for all of their customers, sort of basically on-the-go Wi-Fi everywhere you are. So I thought that was really quite interesting because that really will separate whoever gets that out a little bit from, you know, the likes of Apple, because that's not something they would...
That was exactly what I was just thinking, because there was a story kicking around a long time ago when the iPhone first started about it being, it was called the Hummer of bandwidth, because it was just suddenly sapping up all this bandwidth that the mobile phone market just wasn't prepared for. And there was a lot of speculation that Apple were possibly going to end up buying someone like Sprint, one of the smaller communicators, to try and create their own network and supply their own customers who'd bought the iPhone and just bypass everyone else. And there's a huge question over monopolies and mergers with that as well, though.
I imagine the mobile phone operators are probably getting a little bit twitchy about this as well, because, I mean, if they can bring their own point-to-point internet into existence, it will make completely irrelevant the what is effectively the premium charges that mobile phone operators were so lucky doing what they did when they did it, because all they used to do was GSM was designed for voice calls. Then someone came up with a brilliant idea that they may as well sort of start sticking data down it. I mean, original GSM data was painfully slow, and it's evolved from that point onwards. This could make it accessible, cheap, quick, as long as the infrastructure is built around it. And of course, Google and Microsoft don't own any of the back end stuff, what they call the backhaul, isn't it, or whatever it is, that can connect these point to point links. But if they can start doing that, they can build something which can completely undercut the mobile networks.
Well, what I was thinking is, let's just say, because I know certainly the Kindle 3G used to have a thing, didn't it, where you paid a certain amount when you bought the Kindle, and what was it included? I can't remember.
It was included, yeah.
Yeah, and it meant you got 3G access for your books and its sort of primitive browser wherever you went. Now, if Google did that with, say, their Nexus phone or something like that, and then either bundled it in or made it a small extra charge, I mean, like you say, that's just absolutely going to cream the mobile phone.
If they can secure the infrastructure, the good thing about Kindle was quite clever because, of course, when you've got a paper, a page which it's got very slow update rate, it can display web pages, it can't display video content, you can't throw a huge amount of data down it. They stomached the cost. They decided that it was possible to be able to allow people to download books being K rather than megs, even over stuff which they could stomach. That I think gigabytes of data a month, they really need to be able to make sure they could supply that to the customers, especially if they were to charge a premium for it. I don't think you could ever give it away for free, though. I don't think they could.
Eric, I mean, Sprint was the original supplier for Kindle, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then I think it's now AT&T or possibly both AT&T and Sprint, I'm not sure. But about the white spaces, I think what they did here, although I'm not sure because the white space thing is still confusing, but I think that they said that was going to be totally open space, like consumer Wi-Fi is. So licensing it exclusively to the use of Google or Microsoft seems like it would be a backward step.
Yeah, I mean, Pete in the chat room's an ex-tech for Telstar down in Australia. I'd be interested if he knew any more about the technical specifications of the white spectrum and what it's actually going to give us over and above the existing... whether it's any faster than the existing mobile bands that are being used, 3G, etc., or whether it's slower. I my understanding of it was actually an equivalent speed. It's not a
My understanding is the frequencies. The frequencies are much lower. They are sub mobile. They're subcellular frequencies. They're around about 400 megahertz. And the fact is, you can split that into bandwidth, and that bandwidth is going to be only going to be able to carry a certain amount. But the whole point of it is, rather than the broadcast networks, which are transmitting, 10, 15 miles, you can make smaller kind of channeled point-to-point links, which you could sort of duplicate as long as they were a fair distance away from each other, because you wouldn't get the crosstalk that you would with analog television, for example. That's my kind of my take on it. I don't know if Peter in the chat room, apparently he was a ditch digger mostly, so that's not huge.
Yeah, but he understands spectrum. He's doing himself down there. Go back
the shorter the wave or something, the better it travels or something.
It's the penetrative quality of it. That's I was just about to say, my recollection of the longer the wave, the greater the penetration. So what they've got there is something that's going to be far better for going through buildings, built up areas.
But you can only divide it into smaller chunks. When you've got something 2.4 gigahertz, you can break it into 100 meg chunks and you get more of them. If you go down to 400 megahertz, you've got fewer of those chunks proportionally, and therefore you've got to be a little bit more clever. You've got to be fairly clever about how you slice it all up. But then again, the technology, even for that, has come on amazingly. We were talking the other week about recording digital signals onto cassette tape because the bandwidth required is so much less than it was.
The one thing that's a little confusing here is why do they talk about offering free Wi-Fi instead of free cellular? Would they really just set up 802.11 in those frequencies, or would they do something that was more long distance and more like a 3G or 4G system?
Well, it would need its own protocol anyway, because 802.11 is, well, I suppose 802.11 is got this, it's N, isn't it? It's got the 5 gigahertz frequency range as well. So they could sort of undercut it and put these low frequency ones in. But the whole point of cellular communication is there's a huge amount of, the whole point of the cellular thing is it's supposed to be handed off from station to base station to base station. It requires a huge amount of switching, whereas a Wi-Fi, you can sort of jump from one, like you go to your local shopping center and half of the shops have got Wi-Fi, but you have to sign into each one of them every time. I imagine it's probably going to be more that model.
But the point here that Paul's making in the chat room is the frequency is the key issue. So if you're using a higher frequency, then you'll get more data into it. Whereas if you're on the low frequency, it is totally far better for vocal rather than it is for data exchange.
That's kind of going to be the toss-up going forward with 4G, isn't it? I think with which network you go on in the UK anyway. Because current EE is higher, isn't it, than what I think O2 are going to use in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're bidded for that anyway, so...
It's going to be quite interesting, because what that's going to do is it's going to further fragment the market and further... It increased a different number of ways one can actually, and one has to decide, the phone will come out and either it'll be able to do everything or it's only going to be able to do the thing that your supplier allows it to do. And then you're going to be pretty screwed because you're tied into that. It's like the old days when your phone was completely tied, completely unlockable from the network it was associated with because of the technology. Now you get tri-band phones, quad-band phones as a given, really, don't you?
Batwinch in the chat room has asked a very sensible question and then a particularly unsensible question. What about the distance that the frequency can travel? Well, that's based down on energy. So if you put more energy in, you'll get elongation of the signal. That's it.
Yeah, but the problem with the
penetration is different from the energy that you put in to transmit.
But the further it goes, the more likely, and you get the block of flats effect, where you get a block of 30 flats and everybody's trying to use the same Wi-Fi thing. Nobody can use it because everybody's using the same frequencies because they all penetrate that little bit too far. If you turn the frequency down, there'll be potentially so much crosstalk. So the requirements for regulation is greater.
And then our second question was, do pointy ears help?
Yes.
No idea.
I mean, one of the things that struck me with this, because like everyone's saying, obviously it's going to be quite costly, isn't it, for Google to do this. But, I mean, obviously they've got a heck of a lot of money, and I wondered whether, like with the likes of the Nexus 7 and things, they might be prepared to make this a loss leader, to invest heavily in it to win over a lot more people onto Android.
But the point of the whole point of Google, though, is that they need to ultimately, all right, they say do no evil, but they still need to make money and they need to get some kind of revenue out of this. They're not going to do it for free. They're going to do some stuff. But if you consider that their profits have slid for the first time, you know, they are down. They're really going to have to. They can't be complacent about sort of throwing this innovation out. They've got to start being a little bit more careful, perhaps.
I mean, why would Microsoft and Google be looking at this spectrum as a benefit to them when it's actually so poor for data? Unless is there a technology out there that maximizes data through this spectrum, or is it just?
Well, wait, why are you guys saying it's so poor for data? Because you just said that it penetrates walls more easily. In the US, I mean, that's considered the beachfront property of wireless spectrum when they talk about the 700 megahertz.
Yeah, but hang on a second, because you're up to the spectrum where you're talking about a balancing between load and penetration. When you're talking about this spectrum, from what I understood, and I'll gladly stand corrected because I'm no expert on this, but my understanding of this is high penetrating frequencies, but the quantities of data that can be transmitted on it is lower, significantly lower than the 3G spectrum.
I don't think that's true. Because just think about this as the one example that I'm sure of. If you look at 700 megahertz, which is what Verizon's 4G is on, that took the place of old analog television stations, you know, VHF. And with their on a totally clear tower with very few people connecting to it, you can get like 100 megabits per second.
Yeah, but that's very, very high frequency.
No, 700 megahertz is much, much less than 2.4 gigahertz. Well, that's the Wi-Fi.
What does VHF stand for then, mate?
I know,
but that's in the world of radio frequencies, not Wi-Fi.
No,
cell phones work on a much, much higher frequency. You know, Edge. No,
they're only 1.8 gig, aren't they? They're actually less than Wi-Fi.
I mean,
and 900 megs. But the frequencies we're talking about, around about 400 megahertz, and Eric is exactly right. You get good penetration, but you get little data.
That's what I've just said. You get
that's
great.
Not what I said.
That's what I said.
No. Look at the speed you can get with the Verizon 4G. I mean, if you're gonna say. It's just a simple logic here. You're saying that the fastest current speeds are the slowest, but that's not true. Look at the progression of Wi-Fi over the years. I mean, everyone thought 10 years ago that the highest it was going to get was 11 megabits. Now that same frequency band is up to 250 megabits, if not more, with the latest in and the dual band.
We're not talking about data load. We're talking about data load versus penetration of signal. And you're talking about, when you say beachfront property, you're talking about the tipping point between the adequate penetration or more than adequate penetration with maximized data load with it. What we're talking about in the white spectrum is talking about 400 megahertz is significant in penetration, but low in data load.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to be sending movies down this. You're not going to be sending stuff that's consumption device level stuff. You're going to get a bit of 400 megahertz. The low end of 3G is 700 megahertz.
Mm.
So you're not talking about throwing movies down this pipe.
But would it do for basic browsing?
Yes, you can.
It would
no,
do.
I don't think you can say that because, again, 700 megahertz here is our 4G, at least with Verizon. And that's hundreds of megabits.
Really?
Yeah. So that's what I mean. It's all about the error correction and the multiplexing and the latest stuff that they're doing with the radio technology and the error correction. I don't think the frequency, at least at that range, has anything to do with data capacity. I mean, look at what the bandwidth is of an analog television channel, and look at what you can get over a cable broadband.
I'll stop you there if I may, Eric. Two very quick things. The first thing about the cellular network is actually it has very, very small, you know, a very small coverage. But the whole point of it is you have the cellular tower every couple of hundred meters, and therefore they can stick a load of data down it because the next door one will be running off the same frequency and therefore will be able to carry separate data on the same frequencies because it won't interfere. The television signal was one broadcast frequency sticking 50 megahertz down it, which is absolutely a huge amount of bandwidth. But of course, everybody got the same signal at that point because that was the only one you could get, because it was broadcast. And it's that trade-off between how far it goes and how many people are using each channel of that frequency. So yes, you can get 4G in a cellular network, but you have to divide it down by as many channels as you want to get in the small space you want. And the lower the frequency, the further it goes, and therefore the fewer people can use that.
But, and isn't that exactly what we're talking about? I mean, when they say Wi-Fi, to me, that means that that's a cellular network. That's a very small, that's many base stations, each with a very small radius.
Well, you won't have as many repeaters on this if it's 400 megahertz. It'll be very penetrative. It'll go for a long, long way on the same energy levels.
What they, unless, of course, they reduce the power substantially. It's really difficult to work out what they're going to try and gain from it. That's the overall thing that I can't really get towards. What are they going? How are they going to make money out of it? And what are they going to use? What are they going to put on this thing? Is it just going to be wall-to-wall adverts? Because that's what Google do.
I mean, that'd be one way of making money off it, wouldn't it? You know,
yes. Just, I mean, tune in to the advert station.
You're going
to
end,
like, yeah, radio from the '70s.
You're going to end up with a spectrum that is going to provide you with a decent and very good, probably analog phone signal or good quality phone signal. But you're not going to be pulling loads of data down over it. I just cannot see what they want this for. But they've obviously got some up their sleeve.
Welcome back.
MasterCard has an LCD screen and a keyboard built into its new cards. Singapore MasterCard have launched this. It sounds incredible. It's got a touch-sensitive buttons and the ability to create a one-time password, doing away with the need for a separate device sometimes needed to log in to online banking.
Oh, so it's like an RSA token?
I guess.
I've got like four of those. Those things you stick your card in, you type the number in.
Yeah. That's it, yeah. I mean, they never work anyway. The only one time I've used those things, I've never managed to get them to function. So
they are very good, and they're a good way of ensuring, you know, complete security. I've used them for years, and they are very good. But yeah, I can see it coming. It's but I'm surprised they actually put it in the card. That's what surprises me. Is it actually set? Is it actually being built into the card? Is the bit that surprises me, because the whole point of having security is that you keep it separate. I know it means it doesn't tell you what the PIN number or whatever it is, but the whole point of having these one-time codes is that you actually
Sarah, I think I've got two of these boxes, and I can put the card in either of those two boxes. One's NatWest or one's of Santander, and you can put the card in both the boxes, and you get the same thing come out.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I've got ones for three banks in the UK and one over here, and I can interchange them between them, and they work brilliantly.
So it's just like having one of those boxes connected to the card. So, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming that this is, when I said an RSA token, you know what I meant.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
That's something completely separate. The whole point of that is that you use that to authenticate, to log into something. But it's the same principle. But I was a bit surprised that it's actually built into it, because it is separate. The whole point is, like the RS, like what James is talking about is, I don't know if you have them in America, Eric. Are these like little calculator things with a where you put the card in the top and you type in an eight digit code, and it gives you another 8-digit code which you then use to authenticate on the website?
Yeah, no, we've never had anything like that.
Well, Eric marvelled at my PIN Sentry that I got for Barclaycard the other week.
And it's a PIN Sentry.
And effectively what you've done is you've taken that and shoved it into the card. But the problem is the algorithm has got to come from the marrying of the card to the device. So the device holds some kind of encryption that then communicates with the card, and without the device, you can't get in. But the card and the device are together here. And that's what Sarah's saying, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, this thing about having two-factor authentication is you have two separate things.
Yes.
And the whole point is you bring them together, you've got to first of all get the 8 digits from the website, which you then key in, and then it gives you another 8 digits and go back. But even so, the whole point is that you don't keep these things in the same place. You don't put the card with the little calculator thing in the same way you don't put it with your PIN and stuff like that.
Well, to be fair though, mine's in my back pocket and in my laptop bag, so they're in proximity, but if you nick both, you still need the PIN to the card.
Oh, agree, yes.
And but I don't see that there must be something going on here where those two factors are separated by some stone wall.
No? Well, because I reckon if I were to nick Ewan's card and I put it in my pin sentry machine, it would probably work if I knew what his pin was. And I think it's the marrying up, as you said.
No. The pin sentry, I can borrow anyone else's pin sentry and access my account. And there's no record of my pin number or any access criteria left in the pin sentry. The pin sentry is a dumb algorithm that communicates, and that's it.
Mm. I've cross-used them between Barclays, Lloyds, and RBS in the UK, and they with mixture of cards and the devices, and they all use the same algorithms because they all work on each other's websites.
I have to say that I would much prefer to use this than the really irritating kind of thing that pops up when you try and order something, the verified by Visa thing. They're a pain in the neck to use.
I subscribed to a petition to say how crap verified by Visa was. And I've got to say, honestly, as soon as I changed the memorable word to the expletive that I kept solely reserved for verified by Visa, I've never forgotten it, and I've never had to reset it.
This is going to be my Phantom Menace moment. Why does everybody think it's a bad idea when I think it's a good idea?
What do you mean? What do you think?
Well,
a good
I like
idea?
The verified by Visa thing.
Oh, well, now I can remember my password. I think it's immense. I love it. I'm with you.
See, isn't that the secret? That's what it's about. It's actually about remembering the password. And it doesn't matter whether it's a verified by Visa thing or anything. When you log into a website,
but to be
the password exactly is the same idea, isn't it?
Her password is Jar Jar Rules.
That's an expletive, yeah.
The thing though, sorry, Richard, go ahead.
I was going to say is one of the reasons that this is good is like you say, you've got a two-factor authentication with having the two separate things, but I mean, now we're increasingly mobile and we're probably all logging into computers in different places to do online banking and things like that. So it's a bit cumbersome having this one little device, which, you know, could be at home, couldn't it? Well, and you're trying to do it at your friend's house or your parents' house or whatever. So it seems a bit of a retrograde step in a way to have these sort of things.
Because of the fact that they are interchangeable, I actually don't find that, because obviously, you know, I'm over here as much as I'm in the UK,
right?
And I have those little card machines here and there, and I can use them whichever account I'm using, whether it's in the UK or Ireland.
Yeah.
If they weren't interchangeable, yes, it would be a complete pain in the neck having to carry them around.
The one thing I will say about verified by Visa is I've repeatedly got issues where it gives me an error 158 and I have to go and call so-and-so to find out how to release it. And that happens a lot more lately. And I think that's something to do with them saying about my spending pattern or whatever. And the default position when I do that is I don't make the call. I end up using PayPal instead.
And I have the opposite problem. We're just discussing this in the chat room where I'll get the verified by Visa thing and it'll pop up and it'll just go away going, yeah, you can have that one. Go on, off go. It's only another pair of headphones from eBay because you've broken another pair. I'm not judging you.
I've stopped being asked for the password, says Darren in the chat room. Yeah. I always get asked for my password.
Yeah, me too.
I've never not been asked for it, but when I've put it in, sometimes it said, you've got an error code 158, you need to ring security fraudsters.
Got the measure of you, mate. What about you, Eric? How about in the States? Do you get verified by Visa?
Very rarely. I used to get it. I remember getting it. I forget which sites, but I haven't seen that in a long time now.
So what do they use now instead to make sure it's your card?
Signatures.
Yeah, they don't. They don't use anything.
You've got no chip and PIN, have you, in the States?
No.
We have a 3-digit security code that's on the back of each card, but I mean it's just printed and the human eye can easily see it.
A secure code?
Why is frightening, isn't it?
That's like, how could it be a secure code if it's printed on the back of the card?
It's not.
It always amazes me that the US haven't adopted chip and PIN when the rest of the world have.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. When I went to the US last year, I was amazed. I think there was about probably. There was a few retailers that had had them, but they were very few and far between.
But we don't want to slag off the Americans because they've all got guns.
Sorry, I said that.
Virgin has launched streaming internet TV service. We like Virgin here, I have to say. It's one of those things that it really is a good service. They try very hard, I think. I never have any real problems at home with my broadband. If I do get issues, they're resolved pretty quickly. The Wi-Fi service down on the London Tube, I mean, I've had fantastic service the last week. 43 megabits a second down and 43 megabits a second up is just unbelievable. But they've gone for this idea of taking your TV service and shoving it straight out to you wherever you are, anytime, anywhere, anyhow, if you really, really want it. And it's right up there with the Sky Go stuff, which I've got to say again, is absolutely fabulous.
I was playing with this earlier and I'm very impressed with it. You must be spoiled for choice then. You've got Virgin and Sky now. You can sort of...
Well, I'm not a Virgin subscriber. I'm subscriber for band for broadband, but my TV box is Sky. But Sky Go, the Sky Go application, I have to say, the Sky Go application is absolutely stunning. I sit at breakfast in the hotel in the morning, pull out my iPad, mini iPad now because the other one's broken, and
is that why you fell in love with it? Because it's not broken, right? It's little.
And I put it on, and I go through the news pages and the sports pages, and I click on the interviews, and it just plays the video, and it's smooth as hell, and it's lovely and gorgeous. But they've still got that two device limit, which I think is crap. Because I've got more than two devices, but
Virgin Media have got an iPad app, but not an iPhone app, which can stream video. Unfortunately, sorry, you're going to say.
Is that a matter of time, though?
Hope so.
Virgin says it doesn't stream it over 3G or 4G at the moment, though.
No,
whereas SkyGo does.
But the most fantastic thing is, I've got, if you connect your TiVo box up to the home network, you can remote control. You can get your whole heads-up display on your iPhone, which is fantastic. So you don't have to use that clunky remote control. You've got full control over your. You can change channel. You can watch your programs. You can control your TiVo from your iPhone, which is fantastic. Really, it's a nice interface.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's really going to upset. It's going to wind Beth up something chronic when she realises I've got this. She'll be watching something upstairs. I go, nah, you're not watching that.
There's a point in the chat room here that Tone says Virgin's fantastic if you've got it on cable, but if you want the ADSL connection through the BT line, then forget it. It's crap. But that's because of BT. It's not because of cable. I've got to say, I'm going to stop slagging off BT for a little while because I left my iPad in the caravan when we were at Holiday last week, and the fabulous bloke called Stephen sent it back to me. It's not mastered the journey particularly well. There's a new screen required on it because it's smashed. But the guy that returned it is a BT engineer, so I'm not going to slag off BT for a little while.
Britain's finest.
Britain's Good. Finest, absolutely. Huzzah. Thank you, Stephen. Cheers, mate.
I want to slag off Sky, though.
Go on then, what do you want to slag off Sky for? Go for it, Sarah.
I have a Sky Plus box here, right?
Good girl.
So I thought, great, okay, I'll get the Sky app on my phone, put it on there, great. Okay, I need a Sky ID.
Yeah.
Right, okay. But it won't let me use any of my email addresses because they're not Hotmail.
No, you're not.
Gmail.
It doesn't want an email address. It wants your username for your Skype account.
Don't think I've got one.
Well, how have you got a Skybox then?
I don't know.
Does it only play Freeview?
Yeah, if you've not got a subscription, you get free sat.
Yeah, we've got a subscription, but I don't remember ever putting a...
Well, it's your subscription ID gets you your username. It's not an email address.
Well, it asks for an email address on the website when you go to it.
Does it start the question, riddle me this?
No, I we'll talk about it after the show perhaps, and we'll tech support it. But the thing is, if you get that to work, then you get your you get access to all the sports stuff and all the you won't get access to F1 because you don't subscribe to sports, maybe, but
nope.
But subscribe to sports and you will. Okay.
Can you watch stuff that you've recorded on your box?
I haven't got an iPad. I'm going to have to nick one. I'm going to have to steal one that to find out, because I've only got an iPod Touch and that barely does anything at all. Plus, I only discovered it in the show notes today, so I haven't been upstairs to plug the TiVo into my home network, because as soon as I do that, my wife is going to say, what the hell are you doing now? And it's probably going to start an argument.
Ah. This is exactly, by the way, why I wanted the Sky ID, because I wanted to use the Sky app to actually be able to watch stuff from the Sky Plus box.
Mm. You can watch it on demand, and you can watch the Anytime services, but I don't think you can watch what you've recorded on the box.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You can set the box from the Sky app to record, but I don't think you can watch what's on the box.
Oh, okay. I was kind of hoping I could use it a bit like a Sling box.
Oh, wouldn't that be brilliant? Well, they could watch one thing and you could watch another. Well, I mean, all it is a hard drive, isn't it, really? And it's just streaming data through the Ethernet port.
Alex says
how hard can it be?
That's coming very soon, though.
Oh, hey, having Alex in the chat room with his name back and everything, that's a good thing.
Yeah. David Cameron is testing an app to aid government decisions. you like this one. James, talk us through it, mate.
Oh, I love this. They've developed an app for number 10, so they can carry around with them the sort of the latest political news in a digestible format. I mean, I think it's brilliant. It's like having your computer on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise, having all the stuff that you need at your fingertips, and it's exactly what an iPad or a type of tablet should be used for. And it just amuses me the fact that the government has taken so long to get to the stage where they're actually using this rather than the briefcases full of paperwork. That if you've seen the thick of it, there's this fantastic scene where the cameras pick up writing on the outside that they're carrying. They've got a batch of documents, and they've picked up on a zoom lens the writing on the outside of it. That's not going to happen on an iPad. So win every way.
Yeah, there was that minister, wasn't there, who exposed something by walking down Downing Street with that. Yeah. I can't remember what it was. It was a couple of years ago.
Was he conservative by any chance?
Yeah, and he ended up losing his job or something. Mm-hmm. Somebody had zoomed in and worked out something on government policy which hadn't yet been released.
Richard got that joke, but never mind. Do you know what?
So anyway, yes.
Conservatives, Eric, just to explain, conservatives in the UK are Republicans.
Nowhere near as bad.
Not as no. That's actually doing the conservatives
but,
down.
But
I agree.
They're a better quality Republican. There you go then. But quite basically, right. If there's a sex scandal, you can guarantee it's probably a conservative MP.
Indeed. But I wanted to broaden the discussion to the fact that a huge amount of money was poured into the to something called data.gov.uk, which is kind of like an open source government-provided data spread geographically. The Guardian worked quite hard to sort of do their own kind of demographic maps of, everybody, I'm sure, has seen the crime hotspots maps where you can actually find for certain areas how many burglaries and things. This whole amount of data is becoming publicly available. And if you have the will to do so, you can find some really interesting and possibly useful, I haven't worked that bit out yet, information about what is actually going on and how the country's being governed. Of course, there's always the risk that too much information makes it very difficult to digest, and that's why people are writing these sort of mashups to be able to sort of identify and analyse and manipulate all this data. And ultimately, it's that kind of thing that will hopefully inform government, because that's what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be sort of reacting to what's happening in the country. And with David Cameron having an app on his, as long as the information isn't just what the spin doctors are telling him, his personal advisors are telling him, he may actually be able to make some use out of it.
Maybe you could have, sort of your Rightmove app that connects into, I've lost what I was going to say.
Ofsted for schools. Crime rates, parking.
Yeah, crime rates. Yeah, exactly. So you can watch the crime rate go up on one bar, watch your house price fall on the other
one. Well, insurance companies have been doing that for years. They do a huge amount of analysis of the amount of crime in particular areas. They can only do it in the granular levels of postcode at the moment, but I'm sure, broad first three digits of your characters of your postcode. But the fact that this data is out there and available, I don't think people are really making them enough or much use of it.
Yeah, there's as probably most people are aware, there's been quite a bit of EU legislation on stuff around this area, including the cookies thing. But one of the thing, one of the latest EU things, which I believe comes in early next year, is about, obviously, as you know, government and local authorities have an obligation to publish information, financial information, and so on and so forth. But this new directive is from what I hear from the ICO, is supposed to be actually that when you publish this information, you have to put it in a form where people can actually do something with it rather than just dumping information out, which is what has been the tendency for a lot of the authorities to do. So hopefully it should actually make it easier to be able to pick up data from data.gov.uk and other local authorities and be able to do something with it usefully.
Cool. So can we get an American stance on this? Eric, have you seen any of this kind of thing published? Any information, any knowledge about states or even the whole of the sort of the federated states? What can you learn?
I have no idea because I wasn't able to translate any of what you were talking about into something that I can
understand.
Well,
I think basically the fundamental problem that Eric's going to have in answering that question is if you look at the stuff that's at the national level, the White House has got its application with a lot of history and a lot of policies and that kind of stuff, and Obama's done a lot to the, you know, the Twitter and the open government stuff. But an awful lot of what you guys are talking about, which is effectively our county level, is actually being used and run by national government, whereas in the states it's most definitely at the, it's not at the federal level, it's definitely at the state level. So it depends on each individual state whether it decides to issue public information in that way or not. So Eric, for California, do you get crime figures through your state website, or do you get house pricing, or do you get flood warnings, or do you get any of that kind of public service information stuff through?
I have no idea.
There's an engaged individual. Did you vote, mate?
Yeah, but no, I think the answer is no. I don't think we have that. I mean, I've never heard of any states that really, I mean, I don't know, maybe some do, but usually it's not.
Do you want to go to california.gov and see? No.
Yeah, I guess I can.
I don't know if that's the address. I'm just making that up, but.
Well, the good news is that it means they're not using statistics for their own political ends, which of course is the next stage of this. If they can build. It's all about the graphs and bull crap that people can actually make what they want to say out of the data they get. They just cherry pick it. And it takes people who have a good knowledge. You've got to do a huge amount of research to be able to call them out on these things. So the more data you have, the more knowledge you can possibly use to your own advantage. So in some respects, ignorance is blissful.
Well, I think we're at a real cusp at the moment societally about the number of information that we have and the amount of control that the government can exert by the information that it gathers about you. There's an awful lot of me is very pissed off at how much information people are gathering and storing for little or no end, and there's no legislation that stops them from gathering that and gives me my privacy. I went to hire a car the other week, and they wanted to photocopy my passport.
So they wanted to scrape out the inside of your mouth.
They wanted to look at my back. Well, they probably will want DNA at some point, mate. They wanted to look at my bank account to see that my card matched my bank account number. And it was like, do you know what? Shove your crappy little rental car up your ass was the point that I got to. And it was you don't have a right to photocopy my passport. I can show you my passport. That's fine. But you should not have the right to photocopy it.
Because as soon as you've done that, you've got a copy of something which is really precious to you.
Yeah. There is some legislation in the UK. I assume, Eric, Ewan's aware of this. And I've forgotten the exact name of it, which certainly if you go for a job, your employer has an obligation to check that and make a copy of that information.
Your passport?
Yes, absolutely. Passport or is it national insurance? I think it might be passport, national insurance card, but it's to do with asylum and immigration regulations.
I think you got lucky you could have ended up getting a job at Europe Car.
Yeah, no, it was fine. I had to leave my left leg until I returned the car, but then I reattached it afterwards.
By that, and Ewan, when it comes to that sort of thing, I do think it's totally unnecessary.
There should be legislation stopping people. I mean, I've got some government issued passes, and they wouldn't let me take the car until I showed them an expired pass photo ID, because I haven't got a photo ID driving license. And
therein lies your problem.
Yeah, I'm 30. I don't expire from driving until I'm 2037, and I'm too old for that. I'm not going to send it in. And the pass that I gave them and showed them, they said, "We'll have to make a copy of that." You can't make a copy of that. Why? Well, you're not. I can't let you take that into the back. What do you mean? I have a pass that's issued to me, and that has to stay about my person or in a secure location. You can't walk away from it with me for a start. I'm not going to let go of it. And you can't photocopy it. Well, then you can't have the car. What? I've proved who I am. Sod off.
What that does, you see, Ewan, is they are probably completely ignorant of it. They are following a procedure whereby they need to see evidence of who you are. What they don't realise is that taking the evidence of who you are, somebody with malevolent intent could do something really harmful with it.
Yeah.
They don't realise, it doesn't even cross their mind, because a bureaucratic process that says we want to protect our assets and therefore we require this amount of you to be guaranteed. I mean, you know, it's because cash money ain't enough anymore, is it?
Hmm.
No, I found it quite bad, to be honest.
But I mean, Ewan, I think the thing is there. I mean, I hire cars on a regular basis, and because I've got a photo driving license, I just need to have the two parts of my driving license. And apart from the credit card that I actually booked the car with, I don't need to show them anything else.
No, you haven't been to Thrifty then, mate, because Thrifty want blood and urine in your firstborn child.
I use Europacar and Avis, and I don't have that general.
I won't be going back to Thrifty.
But the point is that I think what it is that their systems aren't geared up for working around anything where somebody hasn't got a photo driving license these days. That's the problem.
Yeah, what's quite just impressive, a dinosaur.
Actually. On the subject of photo driving licenses, I had to renew the photo of my driving license, and so did my wife at the same time. But because she's got a biometric passport, and I don't know whether this is great or a bit frightening, they could use the photo from her part. They've got her photo stored on the computer somewhere, and therefore they can use that photo. Whereas I had to go and actually stick a passport photo to my drive, you know, to a form that I had to fill in and send them £20 for the privilege of looking at that photo and going, ugh. So it's just amazing that there are two kind of parallel things. There's the haves, the internet, the IT haves, where I don't know how much, Richard, you've got of, you know, have you got photos of all the people who come to your surgery so that when you come there, they you know who the hell they are? Is there a database of all this biometric information on everybody? How joined up is it? And that's for government. And then you've got private companies who have absolutely no access to this information and need to accrue their own information through means that you has identified. That's quite frightening, really.
Just to put a Californian slant on this, when I lived in the US, I was over 21. But because I didn't have a driving license, I had a real nightmare trying to do all sorts of things in the US because I didn't have a Californian driving license. I had plenty of other forms of ID. But
I that's just a piece of paper. Is that a piece of paper, or they look
it
up? No,
it was like our photo cards, I'm sure. Right. You've got
it's
one.
It's a photo ID card.
But because it's the primary form of ID, and they were used to everybody over 21 having one of those, because this is like 30 years ago. It was like, you know, so easy to pass the driving test over there. So I'm sure it's a lot harder now. And I just never got round to getting it, and it was an absolute nightmare
How was easy was it to verify? You know, you showed your card. Would they put it through a computer? Would it dial up to the government and ask them?
There's a rampant fake ID. Eric, did you have a fake ID driving license to buy beer when you were a kid?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, goody goody.
There was no right way to answer that question.
But, I mean, it's rampant in the States. Fake IDs for drinking.
Yeah.
That's because your drinking's too high. 21, mate. I was getting served in pubs at 15.
But the point is, it's the opposite in the UK, where if you get pulled over by the police, they will take your driving license and they will connect to the police national computer and find out all kinds of stuff about you that you probably didn't even know that they knew.
Yeah, but they don't need that to be able to do that. They can do that just from your name.
Yeah.
Yeah, how many times have you seen cop programs where they stop somebody and they say, oh, you got any ID? No, I haven't got anything. What's your name? And they give you your name. And then they come back and say, oh, yeah, you've got a list of offences as long as your arm, haven't you, mate? They don't need that driving
that's
license.
Why, yeah, that's why that. I go around telling everybody I'm called Eric Lanigan.
L-A-N-I-G-A-N.
I've got a G with everything. Brilliant. Richard, you're very quiet in all this. Do you know something?
No.
Do you get regularly summoned to pubs to give or to police stations to give breath tests and urine and stuff? No.
I've seen a fair few people through A&E handcuffed to police officers and that sort of thing. But I mean, you said before that I've been in one or two places where they've sort of had photo IDs attached to patients' notes, but it's few and far between. I've got to say. And the whole sort of NHS spine and things hasn't really taken off. If I remember right, the government scrapped a large chunk of it after we'd spent millions on it. So
that was such a shame. That
it was quite a forward thinking idea, but anybody Brilliant. Anybody who's on the inside would know what an utter logistical nightmare that was going to be. You've got practices running various different forms of Windows updated to various different points. Some practices won't allow you to update anything unless IT tell you that they can. You've got various different kinds of clinical operating systems that to interact with. I mean, I kind of work between various practices, and there's about four on the go in the UK at any one time. So you can imagine trying to get all this to talk to each other would be really quite difficult, I would have thought.
Have you come under false pretenses, Richard? Are you saying you haven't got a full-time job? You're going between different practices, are you?
I'm a locum.
I thought, a part-timer.
No.
Oh, harsh.
I work.
Leave him alone. He's got an even tougher job, Ewan.
He's like the supply teacher of the GP world.
Yeah, I was going to say, he gets all the crap.
He's got a sweet talker practice manager every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm only kidding, Rich. Do apologise.
Sorry.
No, I don't apologise, but never mind. This entire project that is the British Tech Network is supported by the UK2.net. They're unbelievable. And if you're in the chat room, then you're going to get a benefit from this. If you're not in the chat room, you're probably not going to be able to get a benefit from this. But at the moment, UKT are giving away .co.uk domains at £1. That's it. £1. And I think, from what I heard yesterday from someone, if you put in British Tech Domains, you get 20% off that. So it only costs you 80p.
Oh!
You can get fantastic reductions on all of your stuff. £1.co.uk. James, you've already got one, it says. I got a few tweets yesterday from people saying that they got them as well. Great, great offer. Go out and do it now, chat room, if you possibly can. And they picked all our bandwidth up last month, and last month was pretty good. We did 114 terabytes of bandwidth. So.
What?
And we did 73 terabytes the month before. So we've had a bit of a good month. September and October have been rather nice. Someone approached us and asked us if we could advertise with them, and I told them, yeah, 4p per listener. And when they got the bill, they said, no, we don't think we're going to deal with that. So 114, yes, Pete. That's all been picked up by UK2.net, and they don't bat an eyelid. They don't say, no, we're not doing it anymore, and run a mile the other direction. And they also never have a server that goes down. Our server's been without. I can't remember the last time the server blipped, even, let alone crashed, and it absorbed 114 terabytes last month. So thank you, UK2. Please support them, because they keep us on the air. Without them, we'd just disappear, plain and simple. UKT.net. Go to our webpage first, use the click through, come back to our page and get the sponsor codes on the sponsors page, and everyone will be happy. Be wonderful. Lovely. Dandy. Superb. Anyway, so I need to dub this bit in somehow. I forgot about the European Podcast Awards. We have got 6 shows that have been nominated for European Podcast Awards. And I've come back on. We're still doing the show. Shh. Make it look seamless, for God's sake. The European Podcast Awards, if you Google European Podcast Awards or you go to the homepage, BritishTechNetwork.com, there'll be a banner on there. 6 shows are nominated. So you've got the Mac Show, the Photo Show, the Big Show, this one, you've got iOS, you've got Gamer, and another one. I can't remember. No, we haven't got anything. Maybe we've only got 5.
Media?
Media, thank you. Media. There we go. That's the sixth. And they're all fantastic shows. They're easily better than all the other crap that's been nominated. So go to our website or go to European Podcasts on Google and vote for all of the British Tech Network shows. And here's the thing. You can vote as many times as you like. All you got to do is vote on the show, close your browser, open it up, and you can vote on all the shows again. And then you close your browser and open it up, and you can vote on all the shows again. So I want 5 votes out of everyone every day, please, from now until when voting closes at the end of November. Get on with it. Cheers. Where can we... no, we're not doing Where Can We Get Aldi. We're doing cool things. Richard, I didn't tell you about a cool thing. Have you got a cool thing for us?
Yeah, I've got two cool things, if that's okay.
Oh, okay.
The first one...
You might need to give one to Eric Lanigan, because he's crap at this.
Now, that's a bit harsh, because he's come up real trumps over the last few weeks.
Yeah, no,
I got nothing today, though. I'm making up for last
so
time.
So you need to DM that to him then, Richard. A trim enable, mate. Thank you. We'll start with James. James, what have you got for us, pal?
Well, this kind of the arrival of Angry Birds Star Wars, you may actually have heard earlier in the show when I actually sparked it up and it actually plays the Star Wars theme. It's brilliant. Listen back to that one.
I want that.
Yes, just download it free on the Android phone. This is completely weird. It can only be an experiment in social psychology. It's called Curiosity, What's Inside the Cube, by Peter Molyneux, the person who ran Bullfrog Games, the theme hospital, and Populous, and others. It's called Curiosity, What's Inside the Cube. Now, you had to go at Farmville, and Farmville was just clicking stuff and getting stuff, and then sort of doing some a little bit of social networking. This is social networking, random clicking. Apparently, there's this massive cube, and everybody in the world who subscribes to it clicks a little thing on this cube and it makes the things go away and you get more coins as you do it and you can get bigger things to the queue. And it's like a pass the parcel, and one person will get the last bit of the last part of the last layer of the cube and win $50,000. And so the whole point of it is that everybody starts just clicking randomly on this cube. Why is the question? But people are doing it. It's a small hit. It's got a cult following of people who are just randomly clicking for no other reason than the fact that either they or several thousand other people will win $50,000.
Right. And it works.
It works, but I tried it for a while and then I got bored.
Okay. Good pick then, if you got bored of it.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what other people... But what really intrigues me about it is it must be an exercise in social psychology. How many people start it, get bored? How many people start it, get obsessed? How many people... Because you sign up by Facebook and you can find out where other people are digging and how other people are getting on. And this, so it becomes this kind of bizarre, utterly pointless race to the summit or the inside of this cube. And people are probably getting massive amount of statistics on why what people are doing, because all you're doing is you're clicking stuff. Try it. See how long you do it for. And it's all free, so you haven't wasted anything except for your own life.
Okay, will do, mate. Thank you very much.
That's completely sad.
Richard, what are your two, mate?
One's an app, which is for Android and iOS, and it's the Movember and Sons app. I don't know if you're aware, but this month has been renamed Movember because it's the month for chaps to grow a moustache. I don't know if you can see this pathetic thing I'm sporting across the top of my lip.
Yeah, dream on, boy. Look at this. Look at this.
it's basically the idea is... the idea is that... men grow one for charity, and you get people to sponsor you in the process. You've got to keep it for a month, and it's to raise money for this Movember charity, which is to do with raising money for testicular cancer and prostate cancer, and generally promoting men's health. And I think it's a global initiative, actually, because I've known people in the States have been doing it, I think. Do you know anyone, Eric?
No.
No, you've not heard of it?
That's the end of that conversation then.
it's a good little app. You can post post updates to your Twitter feed or Facebook through it, and people can donate directly to you as well through it. So it's really good.
Excellent.
The other one I wanted to mention, you may have covered it before, but I just got this recently. It was the it's a little from Just Mobile, and it's a little charger for your mobile phone. And it's rather nice. Right, it's called the Gum Mobile Charger. I think you can see that. And you've got a USB socket there.
Hold it up.
For mine, it's got the 30-pin adapter, but that comes off as well for a micro USB as well. So, and you can get about two or three charges out of it, I think. And it just works very, very nicely, and it saves your bacon sometimes. So I think there's a Gum Plus as well that you can get that can charge iPads and things like that as well. So,
cool. Good pick, sir. Thank you very much. Price on that?
Oh, I don't know. Sorry, I got it as a prize.
Okay, the moustache is free. We'll come back to you if you can find a price. That would be great.
But, yeah.
Sarah, what have you got, girl?
Yeah, mine is, I have to say, I haven't tried this, but I wanted to actually promote it because I thought it was actually really good. And it's come from an idea from somebody in Britain that's gone worldwide. And I think that word deserves promotion. It's a an application for iPhones and Android called Halo, and it's developed by two London cabbies. And the idea is it's an application that allows you to find a cab in 8 different cities, and it's now around the world. It originally started in London, but it's now in Boston, Chicago, Dublin, London, Madrid, New York, and Tokyo and Toronto. And it's just an easy way of actually, you know, for the cabbies that actually subscribe to it, they pay a small fee percentage of their fare, of the fares you actually get through it. But it shows you a map so you can see how far away. It tells you how long it is until the cab is actually going to get there. And, you know, I just think it's an easy and great way of actually getting cab, especially if it's raining and you're indoors and you just want it to come pick you up. I heard about it on the TV. I checked it out and I've actually installed it on my phone, even though I haven't actually used it yet. But I was really impressed because, as I say, it's done by two London chaps the idea has now gone worldwide.
Those apps work really well, but occasionally you get the other one, they say, oh, it's going to be 30 minutes yet before anyone's going to come. Does that one kind of come fairly swiftly or...?
I don't know, say, because I haven't tried it, but I like the idea and the fact that it's something that has been done by some Brits that's gone worldwide. I think it deserves a lot of credit.
I can't. So I was going to say you can't pick something you haven't tried, but I'm going to blow that out of the water in a minute anyway. So, Mr. Lanigan, do you want to formally tell me you got nothing?
I've got nothing.
Okay, right. Cheers, man. my pick is available from Costco. If you've got a local Costco next to you, then you can go down there and order this. It's fine. It works just grand. My pick is the coolest thing that this show's ever seen, and it's also the most expensive. And I don't own one of these. I have to freely admit that I don't own it. But Mr. Paul King, who used to be on The Big Show a long time ago, an engineer, a friend of mine, he showed me this and recommended it, and he's had a play in one. It is a complete F1 simulator. Oh my God. And it's available at Costco. You get 3 screens there on the front that go on a complete F1 car that rolls and runs. It's the entire thing. It's all the fins. It's all. It's a full-size thing. This is not like a little tiny car. But you climb in the cockpit to play it using the steering wheel that's in the F1 car. And it's £89,000.
All that is proper divorce material, isn't it?
So,
where would you put it?
in the camper van you're currently living in, because the wife threw you out. It is just. I mean, if you go to the website to look for this, just Google Costco full size racing simulator. It's £89,000. That's including VAT. So if you can pass this off as a business expense. It's only 74 grand. And you can't add it to your basket, it says on the website. You have to order it through a special phone number. I think we need one
for evaluation purposes on the F1 show, don't we, Ewan?
Yeah, now I don't know what software it runs for the old, you know, the simulator. I don't know whether it uses an app or whether it's a PC driven or what. But there's the view that you get. So it's pretty realistic, I would have thought, at that kind of distance. It's retina display, at least. And that's Monaco. You can tell straight away. So I'm presuming that this would be pretty impressive. But I don't know whether it's running PC-based or whether it's got a dedicated program that we run. But it's a full F1 car. It's the whole thing. It's the shebang.
We'll take donations and see if we get one for the next British Tech Bash.
But there you go.
As Batwench suggested.
I think I win there because that is coolest of the cool things ever on this show. And it's also the most expensive. No one's top 90 grand.
That's a lot of money.
We ought to make a rule that you've got to actually have had the cool thing. I think. Otherwise, it's going to get ridiculous. People are going to be coming out with all sorts. Mine's a Ferrari. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hart?
I'm still using Twitter, despite the fact that nobody's had their password changed yet. SYZYGY, pronounced Syzygy.
Pete in the chat room says, does that have a fat bastard seating mode? What are you saying, buddy? What are you saying? Come on, out with it. Richard, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
You can get me at Are You Getting It on Twitter or on my blog, which is www.areyougettingit.co.uk.
Are you like 57 millionth or something like that and you got that? Because I would have thought that would have been gone at like 2 million.
What do you mean?
And Twitter handles. If you've registered a Twitter handle, something as good as Are You Getting It has got to have gone in the first 2 million people that registered, not...
I was very late to Twitter, so no.
Kudos, dude.
Can I just say, by the way, Richard has only got 21 followers, so please, listeners.
Oh, man. Get Richard. So are you getting it?
Yeah, all one word.
Follow Richard, because he's a dude and a GP.
Thank you very much.
Even though he's a locum. Only does it part-time. Sarah, where are you, girl?
You can get hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
Excellent. And Mr. Lanigan, LANIGAN, where are you, pal?
As you just said it, and also at twitter.com/EricLanigan.
Was it that stressful? Was it that stressful doing the big show last week that you've been in hibernation all week and you only woke up for this event?
Say it again.
Has it really been that stressful that you've been in hibernation all week and only woken up for this show? Oh, okay, right, fine. Eric's sleeping. Shh. We'll see you next week. Thanks for watching. And Mac shows tomorrow, photo shows tomorrow, 2 o'clock. We've got questions, we got answers. I'm telling you. See you then.